man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the PBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
At arms, can you please come in?
Point of order.
Hello and welcome to your weekly dose of political shenanigans with us here at the Sunday Times. This is the Sunday Times Politics Weekly Podcast with me, Amil Amrao, and my colleagues here on the politics desk, Zingisa Mvumvu, Kwanita Hunter, and Apiwe de Klerk. Thank you all for listening in. Remember to interact with us on hashtag #STPoliticsWeekly on social media, where we always post new links to new editions of the podcast, or find us under the Opinions and Analysis section on the Times Live website. Now, with that, all protocol has been observed. We've got a great show in store this week. We'll be talking about the report from the Commission of Inquiry into Interference at the SABC, as well as the unraveling of President Cyril Ramaphosa's New Dawn. So, guys, let's get straight into it. Let's start off with SABC then. So if you guys haven't heard, the Commission of Inquiry into Interference at the South African Broadcasting Corporation has found that the national broadcaster suffered from, and I'm going to quote here, the capricious use of authority and power to terrorize staff. That's a massive claim, guys, and that's quite daunting as well. Now, the commission was set up in May last year, and it released its report into the at the SABC offices earlier this week. And it found that the organization was, and I quote here again, crippled by pain, anger, and fear. And let me quote the commission's findings here. It says that the commission finds that the SABC suffered from the capricious use of authority and power to terrorize staff and deflect the corporation from its mandate and its editorial policies. Now, they weren't able to make a direct link between the SABC newsroom and the ANC, but it did say that the ANC hovered over the newsroom. Directly from 2017 to 2012 to 2017, rather, SABC executives, the commission found, took instructions from people with no authority in the newsroom. And this report specifically cited SABC board member Ellen Chabalala and former communications minister Faith Mutambi. And Faith is interesting because I remember back in 2016 at the SABC inquiry in Parliament, she denied that she interfered in editorial decision-making at the public broadcaster. So, guys, it's quite a scary situation at the SABC at the moment. Let's talk a little bit about the dynamic here when you have political interferences in a news organization, and what does it mean for the country and the public at large?
I mean, the allegations of what you just said, Emil, is not new to the SABC. But it was interesting how they painted this picture of this intimidation, this fear, and its links with politics. And the one part of it you also can't ignore is the actual financial dysfunction that the SABC is in. Because effectively, incompetent and politically connected people, i.e. Claudia Motsoeneng and his crew, were appointed to the SABC, and they then ran two parallel processes. One, to break down all corporate governance issues, which is now widely known because of the dire financial state the SABC is in, but also to reign with so much of fear and so much of intimidation so that you have absolute control over the SABC. So if anyone wants to point fingers at your incapacity, your inefficiency, or your looting, they can't do that because the atmosphere of fear is so entrenched. And on the other hand, you have to then appease your political bosses because you won't be there without them. And so that's why if Faith Mutambi says fire a Limpopo journalist, you fire a Limpopo journalist.
Now, Apiwe, the DA is launching criminal proceedings against Faith Mutambi for allegedly lying to Parliament when she denied any editorial interference in the SABC. What do you make of that? Is the DA just being the DA here, or do they actually have a strong case?
There is a case to be made. When you appear in front of Parliament and are then proven to have lied on under oath, basically, it's a criminal offense. But also there's an element of them being an opposition party. Of course, any clever opposition party should at all times, when such opportunities present themselves, you know, act. It's just that the DA in that Portfolio Committee of Communications has been a very strong voice.
Of course it does.
You will remember how they treated the issue of the SAPC prior to NASREC, and you know, when Faith was there, you remember how that board eventually was dealt with, and all of it. So they've been involved. Ndlozi was involved from the EFF as well. You know, I don't know why they didn't jump on the chance as soon as they got it. But this report, it's interesting that they point at the former minister, because, you know, since when I was aware of how the politics of the SAPC and what, it's always been that the ANC interferes, but you've never really had documentation or a report that is a standing that would say so and so did this here, so and so did this there. Now that when they appointed the minister, I think, you know, they've got a good case.
Sigisa, how dangerous is this when you have a political party that has been found to be hovering over, as a report says, an SABC newsroom? And this is not just any newsroom, it's the public broadcaster. This is where a lot of people in the country receive their news from.
Look, first of all, I mean, in my opinion, this is nothing new, what is happening at the SABC. And I think part of the problem starts with how we refer to the SABC sometimes as a state broadcaster. SABC is not a state broadcaster. It is a public broadcaster because the state, who has got state power in South Africa since 1994, it is the ANC. So by actually referring to it as a state broadcaster, you give the ANC the legitimacy to say that we control this particular institution. I guess that's where the problem starts. And really, the ANC has been having its hand in the cookie jar, that is the SABC, since forever, as far as I can remember. It's interesting now that we actually have a report that goes deep into the issues, the underlying issues into that interference. I just don't know how we are going to move forward. It is dangerous because the SABC, as a public broadcaster, has got a mandate to educate, inform, and to entertain, not to disinform or push a particular propaganda of a political party. Even within the ANC, it never pushes the propaganda of the ANC as a party. It pushes off the hegemonic faction at that particular time. That's the danger about the whole thing of editorial interference. It's said that the likes of Mr. Thlaudi Motsoeneng, who was ruling with an iron fist, I mean, I was watching him on TV last night. The guy says nothing wrong. I mean, he says the report is rubbish. He doesn't know all those things that they're talking about, but he was there for 5 years, and we know that indeed that's how he ruled. I mean, he had a whole defense force and press conferences. He would have employees at the SABC, not toying on his behalf, which showed how much hold, and the grip he had on the SABC. I'm just worried. I don't think there's anything that's going to be fixed going forward. As I say, that has been the culture of the ANC since 1994. I don't see it changing because of this report. Especially, I don't know the legal standing of this report, if indeed there will be any consequences. But if history is anything to go by in South Africa, reports like these, they just become topical and then nothing and then happens. Disappear. You know, even this case that the DA opened against Faith Mutambi, I really want to see where it's going to end. But I can promise you, it's not going to end anywhere. And if there are no consequences, what will stop these incidences from happening going forward?
I think that, you know, the political change in the ANC, or whatever you may call it, made the SABC a little bit more emboldened, or the people appointed to the SABC a little bit more emboldened to be, you know, for the people, to make bold choices, etc., right? But there's always going to be criticism of the SABC because it's such a huge institution with such a ginormous public service mandate. But the reality of it is that we all thought that removing Cloudy would solve the problem. Cloudy has left, and yet the legacy of Cloudy long lives. And this report really, I think, is such is a step in the right direction, because it basically gives a benchmark of how bad things are, or how bad things had become, and how how much is needed to fix the institution. And then, like I was saying, the dual challenges of like so you had, you know, if you look at the public protector's report on Claudia in the SAPC, you know, she called it something, what did she call it? Misgovernance or something like basically a state of there was a lack of corporate governance at the SABC. So that was on the corporate side. Then you had the editorial structure that now this report says it was completely decimated. And then financially in parliament, we know that they have no. So, I mean, one has to, you know, have a bigger, more mature conversation about the state of the public broadcaster and say, okay, is it commercially viable, financially viable? If it's not, living up to its public service mandate, at least it must be self-sustainable. You know, one of the two. And so I think that it's just a one example of the many, many, many incidences of how state institutions or public institutions, let me not use the word state, you're right, Zingisa, that, have been used, you know, in the Zuma era, how it was decimated, not only for financial gain, but for amassing political power. Claudia was no one without the SABC.
Let me put this question to you guys. Let's use the SABC here as a case study and Faith Mutambi's alleged interference in its decision making in the newsroom. And what comes first to my mind is when Jacob Zuma appeared before the Zondo Commission of Inquiry, the state capture, and he was asked questions about CADA deployment. And basically, he sees the ANC has this sort of, judging by Zuma's reaction, that they find nothing wrong with this. You know, where you deploy your cadres, or basically when you deploy your ministers there to various state departments or to public institutions, and basically you send them there. And his response was to make sure that the ANC policies are carried out. Now, is this a symptom of that? Because now you have certain ministers, like an example here, Faith Mutambi, making sure that the SABC by all means carries out various her factional, maybe it's not policy, but carrying out certain factional ideas, factional ideology, punting one faction over the other. Is this a sort of interference that we should be seeing, and is this a symptom of the CADA deployment policies from the ANC, Apiwe?
Okay, look, the ANC can, and I assume other parties, when they take government, would put in their own people. But the problem with them, it's when you put someone who's clueless about what the mandate of that institution is. You can't treat the SABC like a state-owned enterprise.
Of course.
Therein lies the problem with how the ANC political principals who have been that communications department is that they treat SABC as you would ESCOM. Even though it would be wrong with ESCOM, but SABC is the primary source of news for the majority of South Africans. Now, when you do such things, you are killing it. You are killing it off. And you know, there are people who still listen to radios back in rural areas, and they have SABC 1, 2, 3 to watch the 7 p.m. news, morning live, and all of that. So now when you have Faith Mutambi directing people to be, it does a disservice to them. And they're expected to pay TV licenses, you know.
So how do you draw the line then between pushing the party's mandate and policies and actually interfering in a department or something like the SABC?
Look, maybe I'm able to combine that with your first question on CADA deployment. There's nothing wrong with CADA deployment, but there's everything wrong with the ANC CADA deployment. Why am I saying that? Yeah. The ANC CADA deployment is mostly premised on people who, first of all, are not qualified. Second of all, they have no idea what they're doing. But the reason for that is that their political principals want people who will be able to carry out whatever instructions that they are given from a political level. Of course, if you put someone who is qualified, let's say for argument's sake, a lawyer, to be a CEO of the SABC, that's not someone you can just bully around and boss around, because they will tell you sometimes that your instruction is illegal because I know what is supposed to be my job. But if you just find a guy who's just excited to get the position,
they will obviously implement all your instructions, even if they are legal or illegal. That's where I say the ANC cadre deployment goes wrong. I mean, there's nothing. If you control state power, you've got to have you know, people who believe in what you believe in carrying out that mandate. But it should be people who are capable, who are qualified, and that is what I think has gone wrong mostly at the SABC, in that, especially in this particular era of Mr. Tlhabo Motsoeneng, in that he was, in fact, I would say he felt so much that he was done a favor to be given that position. He admits now publicly that he doesn't even have metric. How can you put someone like that to be in charge of a multi-billion organization like the SABC? It's ridiculous. I mean, and just to maybe emphasize it, I remember in 2013, I went there with the guest, Mr. Tlhabo Motsoeneng, how he worshipped the ANC. I was there, I was supposed to interview him. Sometime in 2013, I went to his office. On the day, there was a press conference that was going on at Luthuli House. The guy made me wait because he said, I want to listen to leadership. You know, that's how much this guy thought he was a politician himself. Yeah. I'm like, dude, you said we must meet this. I'm like, no, you can wait. I need to watch leadership.
Well, now he is a politician.
You know, so yeah. I think that's just, you know, the problems with this cadre deployment issue and how it collapses state institutions.
And, you know, the worrying thing is that this type of, I don't know, negativity, or I don't know how you, or this poison that comes out of situations like the Tlhabo situation, long last in these organizations, that even if you now put competent people at the SABC or you put competent people in other institutions, it's so far broken that they won't survive. And the reality of it is, I was having a debate with someone earlier today about this whole fight back concept, you know, the ANC political. But it's a very simple thing. It's you, say, Emil, you had unfettered powers in the Sunday Times. And someone comes and removes those unfettered powers. And you did illegal things because of your unfettered powers. And there's a chance that you can be caught with. You will fight back. Simple. That's a simple thing. So I think what you also see at the SABC is that even though there's an attempt to turn things around, to professionalize it, you know, Tito Mboweni is giving them money with a whole list of conditions. There's an attempt to reintroduce corporate governance, good corporate governance into the SABC. The reality of it, this poison of what Zingisa was talking about as a result of whether it was case of deployment or inefficiency of Cloudy or this, you know, thinking he was a politician, has long perverted the institution. And so the consequence of it will be felt for many, many, many more years than those 5 years or so he was at the helm.
We're going to take a short break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about a new story that emerged this weekend regarding President Cyril Ramaphosa. Join us when we're back.
Racial identity politics. A phrase that has the potential to start an argument in just about any situation. That's why we're starting it first. Let's Start an Argument is a unique and insightful podcast series about the meaning of race to us today. Presented by researcher Cecilia Koch and Doctor of Philosophy Jason Werbeloff, the series aims to spark rational argument and meaningful discussion around this controversial topic. Find Let's Start an Argument now on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's get back straight into it with the story of the week. News 24 reported on leaked emails from the heart of President Cyril Ramaphosa's successful 2017 ANC presidential campaign. And those emails reveal the name of some of his potential donors and undermine, they say, News 24 says, the defense that Ramaphosa was kept at arm's length of his funders. Now, basically, in News 24's report, they speak about a few issues. Firstly, they show that Public Enterprise Minister Pravin Gordhan was central in raising funds for Ramaphosa's campaign. It also shows that the president was consulted by managers of his campaign about plans to approach several donors. This includes one of those submissions from a Greek shipping tycoon who was allegedly involved in the arms deal, and another person called Paul Ekon, who's a millionaire miner with close ties to former ANC party leaders. Guys, this Ramaphosa funding story has been going on for months and months and months, mostly because, as we know, his battles with the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, which is now in court, and with other things that keep emerging all the time. But the thing is, we've got to talk about here is that where does this leave Ramaphosa? Because if why it's so important is that President Cyril Ramaphosa, in his 2017 campaign, campaigned on accountability, on transparency, on good governance. And that was what set him apart from his competitors. So now we have this whole notion unraveling. Apiwe, what does this mean for Ramaphosa? Because campaigning on a ticket like that, you would expect that the president would be totally transparent, or should we be holding him to that regard because of that, or should we just treat him like any other person because it's not essential or compulsory for him to disclose his funding?
You see, the whole campaign of CR17, the way he spoke about it in public, it was different from other campaigns of internal positions in the ANC, in that no one really says they are campaigning.
Of course.
So with him, because he took us there, and during that
campaign... So now he must tell us.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to know, you know, he must come to the public and explain. I mean, his people have been saying that they were going to have a press conference sometime on
Tuesday. And then they cancelled it.
And then they cancelled. I wonder why.
They were handled at Lutuli House, probably. Someone handled them from up top.
Look, the guy is not obliged to disclose who funded his campaign, but I mean, because this is how he approached us as the nation, to say this is the kind of a person.
So
I
because
am.
He approached us on the accountability and transparency ticket, so now he must be obliged to own up to what he promised us. Is that what you're saying? So it sets him apart from everyone else.
Yes. Otherwise, it's just like any other politician.
It's just politicking.
Yeah. Also, no one told him to say that he was not involved in the campaign.
Yeah,
that
was all him.
Yeah, he volunteered that information. So if there was not. I mean, really, that was an unprovoked kind of undertaking to say, you know, I had nothing to do with this campaign. If he said I was part of the campaign, but I didn't know about Bosasa, I mean, people would have bought it, people would have not bought it. But you unprovoked said that. Mm. And now there's evidence to the contrary. But I want to talk a little bit about the actual emails.
Yeah.
These emails surfaced the same day the public protector released her report, right? Mm. Now, having reported on emails before in the form of the Gupta leaks, whatever, it's difficult to take something from social media and report on it, right? I think News24 did a good job in the fact that they just said, we've authenticated it, but we don't know how the legality of it. But there's an interesting part in the public protector's report, where she says she has evidence that Ramaphosa knew about the donations. But there's no way in the report that she includes it.
Yeah.
She then has an interview with Karen Moore, our colleague, but she was doing the interview in her capacity as Newsroom Africa. And she then repeats this and says, I have evidence that the president knew about it, right? So the president now takes the matter on review. And in his papers, he cites that interview that the public protector did and said, what were you referring to? What evidence? Because, you know, the public protector has to disclose what evidence she considered in making these type of findings. And so the court case, so that's going to be an issue of the court case. So now the defense of the presidency is, you know, where was this, you know, it's dodgy how these emails were obtained. How did the head of state? Now, from a journalist's point of view, that is inconsequential to me. There's emails in the public domain. It's been authenticated and therefore it can be reported on. But for me, it's then worrying if the public protector relied on these emails, makes a finding based on these emails, but does not include these emails because she knows that it won't withstand scrutiny when it's been taken on review. So that's a separate matter. That's why I always said, in this whole debacle of the president and the public protector, I said two things. This is legally, it's a straightforward matter. You will win that case. I'm not putting my neck out, but it seemed as if he may win the case on a legal issue alone. But politically, this is the beginning of the end.
So let's talk about this quickly at the broader topic here about transparency and political funding, right? The thing is, we ought to know who's funding our political parties. And this is where the political, the party funding bill comes in, right? But let's look at the ANC alone, because now you're looking at presidential candidates, not parties as a whole. Should we know who's funding our presidential candidates coming from the ANC, for example, like in 2017? And why is it important that we should know or should not know?
Look, first of all, I mean, let me quote my favorite comedian, George Carlin, on honesty and politicians. If honesty and accountability were to be introduced into politics, the whole system would collapse. Therefore, I'm not surprised by this ducking and diving, refusal to come up, you know, saying things that backfire and all those things. It's just the nature of politics. It's important that we know who funds our politicians. You see, the reality is that throughout the history of politics, politicians have always been funded, and the funder always has got motives. The question would be, does the person who's being funded know about the intentions of the funder? Sometimes they do.
And will that person act on those motives afterwards?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You know, it's important for us. It's better when we know who funded you, and then we can devise in how, for instance, there's nothing wrong with being funded if it were, you know, out and out an honest process, because we would know, if we know that, say, De Klerk Foundation funded you, and then 3 years down the line, De Klerk Foundation gets a tender worth a billion, then I can easily make the connection with, this is why this is happening, you know. And if De Klerk Foundation funded you.
We're talking about a pure De Klerk Foundation here.
Not FWD. Yeah, this is a pure. So, you know, so we would know. And it would make, if the process was transparent, it would make it completely impossible for the administration that was funded by those particular companies to do anything dodgy. But if it's done in secret that we don't know, for instance, now we don't know in full detail what are the companies that funded President Cyril Ramaphosa's bid for the ANC presidents. We don't know that some of them actually have gotten state tenders since 2018 up to now. And if we happen to know, then I will be very worried about my president, that people who funded him suddenly, they are having dominance in state tenders. I'm just making an example. I'm not saying that is the case. Of course, we don't know the full extent of the truth here, because the president, again, refuses to come forward. Okay. One thing I liked about the advice that the EFF has long given him is that come out voluntarily and reveal the whole truth.
You've got
nothing to lose. But the president just keeps on ducking, just keeps on saying things that he doesn't have to say, that he's not even compelled to say. And he's digging himself into this huge hole. And as Kwanita is saying, politically for him, I doubt there will be a comeback from this.
I agree with 100% what you said, but the EFF cannot pontificate on this matter, nor can the DA, nor can the Freedom Front Plus. No political party or politician in South Africa can pontificate on this matter, because they must all reveal what we can.
They are all funded.
We can scrutinize all of them. Yeah. We can scrutinize all of them. We can look into Ramaphosa and demand that, and we should, and he should, reveal his list. What is it? 179. What was the amount of donors? 179 or something.
It's a lot of donors. A lot of money.
No, it is a lot of money. And the reality,
expensive to
the, reality of it is, the reality of it is that politicians, I mean, this is what I can't understand about South Africa. We have such short-term memories. The RET faction that's now jumping on this again. I'm not, by no means, I wish, God, South Africa, you can't make a point without now being called a cabalist, but let me make my point. The people who are holding Ramaphosa accountable for not disclosing, I'm talking within the ANC, the whole RET gang, forgetting that they fronted Mzwanele Manye to go to parliament to say the whole political party funding bill, and now is an act, will bankrupt the ANC. They were the same people that opposed it. So we really, really, really need to have a broader discussion about party political funding. The Chief Justice has repeated this. I don't agree with the Chief Justice model in saying the state must fund people's political ambitions. That's rubbish. You can't. We have no more money to give. But the reality of the situation is that in this particular instance, the Busasa report, you take it on merit, you take it on law, and that's a legal issue. Mm. Politically, like you said, Ramaphosa campaigned that he was the better man. He was the more accountable man. He was a man with integrity. And he's proving himself wrong. Mm. Third set.
Because there's no politician like that.
Exactly. High five. And the reality of it, and the third point is that the people in the ANC who are using this to attack him were the same people who said if there's a law to fund, not even individual party ambitions, just political party funding, they opposed it. And so politicians are all hypocrites. So that's the moral of the story.
On the political party funding, you see South Africa, we are in a very tricky situation in that. You see, there are quite a number of people from the opposition parties who were opposed to the revelation of their donors.
Mm.
Because primarily they say, if it's known who funds so and so, those in charge are going to deny them access to business. So if it's known who funds the EFF, if it's known who funds the Freedom Front Plus, here in Gauteng, if that person is doing business here in Gauteng, the political opponents are going to frustrate them.
Yeah.
So it's very tricky. Maybe I should agree with the Chief Justice to say there must be some sort of funding model that is going to be transparent but also protect the smaller or the opposition parties, so that, you know, they too have access to finances. Because, I mean, politics is expensive. You have to find
But they them. Do have access to finances, and so does the ruling party. The reality of the situation is that no amount of money that the state will give political parties or politicians will stop them from doing things underhandedly.
But here's the thing. So how then do we go forward? Because, as Apiwe said, there might be discrimination if people know who your funders are as an opposition party. But at the same time, you need the level of transparency because you need to stop what essentially is basically capture, is it not? Or pushing your agenda as a funder. So that, where do you go and how do you sort it out? How do you fix this problem? Because on the one hand, there's you need money to campaign as a political party or as an individual within your party. So, and campaigning is a global phenomenon. So it's nothing new. It's nothing different. So how do we make it so that it doesn't affect the public? That's the biggest question.
Can I just jump in on 1 second?
Mm.
You do know that the public, this political party funding act doesn't solve the Ramaphosa problem.
No, of course it doesn't.
That's already it's a loophole.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
where do you go?
No, should it? You see, that when you, if you apply that law, I mean, on internal party contests, how would it apply? I mean, because for political parties, the reason why we want to know who funds them is because we vote for them. We don't vote for individuals.
Mm.
So now when you create a law to say individuals within their own parties, when they contest, then it must, some people contest internal polls
exactly.
And never go to government to start with. Like for instance, Ace is in Luthuli House. So,
and he may have used money.
He may have used money. So yeah. Now we can then as, a citizen says that he must be compelled to, because I mean, he's not being paid by us, he's being paid by his party.
So basically, we're all in a mess and we don't know how to solve the situation.
So let's all weep, get a stiff drink.
Look, it's a tough situation, but I have to disagree with you on the Chief Justice one. I agree with him. We may not agree with the detail, but I agree with him on the point that, first of all, private business shouldn't have anything to do with funding our politician. As long as that exists, I believe even if there's transparency, we will always be troubled.
Mm.
You know, because private sector, really, there is no free lunch, as the Chief Justice put it.
Mm.
There is no way any business person would fund you as a political party or as an individual just because they like you, just because you, Amir, you are better than other people. I really like your ideas. There is no such thing. Not with business people. Ruthless fellows, those ones. They find you because they see a potential to benefit.
Of course.
You may not know.
Those are business
people. Yeah. You may not know about it, but they will remind you one day. And when they remind you, you will know that you are wherever you are because of their contributions. So really, maybe, I mean, I think the proposal that Chief Justice is making, that maybe we have to find a way. I like that he said we can debate this, whether the state should really find ways to fund, you know, people with political office ambitions. And maybe
we
have a meritocracy type of, you know, criterion. Mm. We can discuss this, but I really say private, as long as private, you know, business is involved in this, I really doubt that we will have a permanent solution.
Want me to finish it off?
Like I said, I agree even with the public, with the Chief Justice. I'm saying increase the funding.
Yeah.
Give them more money, right? Yeah. Because already the state does pay political parties, right?
Yeah.
You need to give them more. But the reality that I'm saying is there's no way to monitor private business from giving money to political party or politicians. And the flip side that you're facing is people are just going to loot from the areas of the state that they are in control of to use to further their entrenchment in politics.
Mm.
So if you are the ACDP and you have a municipality in Vlakfontein, you will use that as your base to then take as much as you can to then keep you in power in Vlakfontein and extend your power elsewhere.
True.
So that is what I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about that it's something that you can't fund. Now in America, they've legalized corruption in the way that you have a super PAC. So the super PAC is where you have, you know, people donate money to the super PAC. It's allegedly anonymous. And then, but the reality of it is if I want a dam, to be built, my company to build the dam, I pay money into the super PAC. It's supposedly anonymous, and then effectively I come and collect from my governor. You know, that's how it works. So so that model is even worse. To say let's create a framework to say have these blind super PAC situations, because it doesn't work.
Mm.
So the only way, I mean, for me, dictatorship is looking very appealing.
Before you close, the other question you will come in. No, I'll forget this point. The other question, especially on this party internal contestations, for me, I mean, really, I would ask myself, why do you need so much money to campaign within your political party?
For 4,000 votes.
You know, why would you need, for instance, let's work with the numbers that are out there, much as we don't know the accuracy. Mm. Let's say 400 million, you know, as is the report. Yeah. Why would you need so much money to convince your own comrades that they should believe in you and vote for you?
Mm.
And you can't tell me that is just funding rallies and all of those things. No, come on. We have to be serious here. And those things, if we had maybe a model that your own political party, when there's contestation, there's openness, everyone is given a fair and equal opportunity. But then again, it's never the case, because whoever is in charge at the time, they would give advantage to their proxy that they want to emerge. But if we had a fair, political system, maybe it would be better if a party gives everyone who's capable, who's of being a leader, an equal opportunity to campaign within the party. If, say, you want to go and address a Cadres Forum in the Eastern Cape, the party pays for you and all your stuff, then maybe we'd have a better situation. But still, I think some of the figures are just, you know, extreme in terms of why would you need so much money. I think a political party that would be an official opposition would do well with 400 million to campaign as a political party. So, you know, it's a lot. There's more to this political funding thing, you know, even in terms of internal politics. We know in the ANC, it's a subtle debate of how votes are actually bought. In that people don't vote for people because they believe in their program, they believe in what they can do, but it's voting with your stomach. You are given something so that you vote for me, not necessarily because of my vision for the country and the party, but because I've given you something. Hence, at times, these amounts escalate to these extreme amounts that cannot be explained. So I think there's also that debate. We should also take it to that level to say, what sort of criteria the ANC has got, this so-called eye of the needle, but I really doubt they apply it most of the time. If you check the caliber of leaders that they've produced, especially after democracy, I doubt that that thing just exists in, you know, ideology, but it doesn't get applied. So I think we should also stretch the discussion to that to say, why, what sort of criteria do we use to elect our leaders? Why do they have to be funded if we have a criteria and anyone who fits perfectly into this criteria and they can convince me and you, then we vote on them on that basis. But because we live in such a system, then we...
Api, we'll finish it off for us.
Oh, okay. You basically said 80% of Adam.
I've covered chair.
I agree with you. And the reason why money is being used is because ideas are not there.
Yeah.
They're dead.
Yeah.
That's a strong statement.
In the ANC. Let's not talk about other parties. Just the ANC. These people, when they go and address you, they are not addressing you to convince you of their idea per se. They are addressing you to show, to see how much has the money been able to bring numbers. So when they are actually addressing, they are not conscientizing their members. They're not giving them political education. It's just a show of force. That's it. So they spend so much money to buy a chairperson of a branch, the secretary, and to forge the attendance register so that you have more delegates. And it's just that maybe the ANC should be then voted out of power, and then maybe we must be abused by another party, you know, maybe but not a different system.
Yeah.
Because this way, their leaders, because they are in power, they graduate from a branch level through this money shenanigans. Imagine the guy who's been funding you since back when you were just the secretary of a branch. Now you are the premier of Gauteng. They are going to come to collect.
Exactly.
So maybe we will need another bunch of crooks.
But the reality of it is that what's waiting for us on the other side is no intra-party democracy. So
unfortunately, that's all we have time for this week, guys. But listen, by no means are we experts on how to solve the political party funding debacle, but maybe you have some ideas. It would be great if you could interact with us on social media at #STPoliticsWeekly. Tell us what you think. Can we solve this crisis in the political party funding system? And if you enjoyed this podcast, please share it, retweet it, tell your friends about it. It's doing really well, and we'd love to get your support. Remember, if you do want to advertise on this platform, you can email us at smiths@tsoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tsoblackstar.co.za. Guys, thank you so much for joining me in studio. We really appreciate it, and have a good week. We'll catch you again next week.